This is Mallory Nye, and welcome to episode 11 of the Religion Bites podcast series. In this episode, we'll be exploring gender, sexuality, power, and religion. If you haven't done so already, you can get more information about the Religion Bites podcast from my website, mallorynye.com/religionbites. And if you want to subscribe to Religion Bites or otherwise to listen to some of the earlier episodes, then you can do so through the website or otherwise on iTunes or Stitcher. So, gender, power, and religion. How does gender matter in the study of religion? Gender matters a great deal to our understanding of culture and religion. How we understand gender, gender differences, and the understandings and practices of gender all have a profound impact on how we talk about and also understand religion. Gender is a means of understanding the concept of culture. All aspects of culture are gendered, both in terms of how differences between genders are perceived, but also how they are lived out. Gender is a place for power relations. Remember from the last episode that power is everywhere. Not only clear-cut male control of women, such as patriarchy, but also the means by which power relations are put into practice. To be a person is to have a gender. Usually this gender is ascribed, it is given to us at birth, most usually as a male or female. In some cultural contexts, there might be an ambiguity or a pluralism about gender. That is, it's possible to move between genders, or perhaps to have a gender that is not specifically male or female. Whilst in other cultural contexts, the dominant and dominating ideas are of fixed genders. Men are men, women are women, and that's it. But even so, there are often variations. A boy is different from a man. A young adult woman is different from an old woman. And perceptions of cultural, ethnic, or class differences may also impact on perceptions of gender. Let's sort out some basic terms to help us find our way through this. These terms seem simple, but the more we explore the issues of gender, the more challenging and difficult they become. First, the term of sex. This is often seen as a biological category, a simple matter of saying, based on anatomy, what a person is, male or female, perhaps. Then there's gender. This is the ascribed status based on the biological sex. Gender is often perceived as a binary into men or women, on the basis that most people are either a male or a female, that is their sex and their gender. Then, third, sexuality. This is not the same as biological sex. It refers to the orientation of practice and identity. Quite simply, sexuality is often described in English-speaking cultures in terms of heterosexuality, homosexuality, and bisexuality. Whilst with sex and gender as we've set them out, they tend to be relatively neutral terms, that is usually without any particular social or cultural stigma, sexuality is often heavily normative. That is, the common idea, often expressed in religious terms, that heterosexuality is normative and is the default human requirement, and other forms of sexuality are marginalized and often stigmatized to the point of punishment. In a number of religious contexts and religious traditions, this emphasis on heterosexuality and the stigmatization of other forms of sexuality is given strong emphasis, such as through the idea that humans are made by God to be heterosexual. Fourth, there is identity. Gender identity can be given to us. We are told we are a man or a woman. And it's also something that we try to live with and construct for ourselves. Sex, gender, and sexual identities can be complex, working at both the personal and the social level. Let's take a contemporary example of this. The public American figure Bruce Jenner, who was born anatomically as a heterosexual man. He now has an identity as a woman, that is, as Caitlyn Jenner, of female gender. Gender identity can also be ambiguous. Another example of this is the Austrian singer Conchita Wurst, a person with an obvious male physiology, a beard, but who identifies, dresses, and acts and sings as a woman. An important issue here is how much can an identity be chosen rather than ascribed or prescribed? And in particular, what are the social and cultural forces and the power relations that influence such identities and the ways that they are practiced? This brings us on to the fifth, practice, the lived element of all the above. A person who is born as a man is expected to live as a man. If we stay with the example of Bruce Jenner, it was not until he was 65, that is in June 2015, that this person, he previously, now she, publicly put into practice his, now her, female identity as Caitlin by taking part in a photo shoot for Vogue magazine and coming out through the Kardashians TV series. The image she presented as Caitlin in Vogue, the way she now acts, and the ways in which people talk about and represent Caitlin, and every other male, female, transsexual, and transgender person, are all part of the practice of sex and gender. It can be specific to a particular person, such as Caitlin, or anyone else, and also in general. In short, the practice of gender identities, the roles and expectations that people have and bring to their relations, is everywhere in human interactions, just like power. Gender forms a major part of how we relate to each other. It begins at birth, when we start to speak out gender identities and questions and ways, such as, is it a boy or a girl? Do they wear pink or blue? How do we name the child? And so on. And this continues in an embedded way throughout a person's life. The practice of gender is the sea in which humans swim. But as I've tried to highlight, it is not simple, it's not straightforward, and it's the means by which power relations between people are thought about and put into practice. At its most raw, the power of gender is the controlling power of men over women. Through the control of patriarchal power, men organizing society to keep women under their control. And or it can be through the threat and practice of violent gender and sexuality, such as the use of rape as a means of causing fear, debasement, and again control. It's no accident that a major TV series such as Game of Thrones, which uses dramatic fantasy as a means of expressing raw power, relies heavily on threats and actual dramatizations of rape in its depictions of power. If we return briefly to the discussion of power and religion, it's no surprise to find that most religions provide ideologies not only of class power, justifications for the rich ruling over the poor, as we discussed in the last episode, but also for gender power, that is, male power over women. The feminist thinker Mary Daly, and many others since, have pointed to the simple issue that nearly all religions are patriarchal. They act as ideologies in support of patriarchy in some way or other. In accepting this, it does lead to a number of difficult issues which have been explored and discussed within the feminist study of religion. For example, what about religions such as goddess-centered faiths that might not so obviously express male power over women? And also, if this is the case, then why do women, sometimes in contexts such as contemporary liberal Western anti-patriarchal cultures, why do they choose to belong or even to join religions that appear to be heavily dominated by male ideology and patriarchy? In recent years, the last two decades in particular, the latter issue has become strongly focused on issues of Islam and patriarchy, focusing on a range of issues, including extremist Islamic groups such as the Taliban and ISIS and so on, access to education and equal opportunities, cultures associated with Islamic societies in the Arab and South Asian world, religious texts and teachings such as from the Quran and other Islamic texts and traditions, and most particularly the clothes that Muslim women wear. One item in particular being the headscarf or the hijab. That is, Islam is often seen as one particularly strong, indeed the representative example, of the interplay between power, gender, and religion. That is, between patriarchy and women in a global context. But it is no means the only example. Power and gender map out in every religious context, and very often in ways that are clearly, or not so clearly, ideological. Gender plays out strongly in traditional and liberal American contexts of Christianity, ranging from debates about abortion and women's and men's roles to the recent large culture war debates about marriage and sexuality, same-sex marriage, and so on. On a lower level, religion also has a very significant role in the values that are expressed and debated about families and family life, and various gender-based expectations of women and men. One could also argue that religion often has an impact on the frequent blind spots and willful denial on rape culture. As we will explore in later episodes, religious groups, ideas, and practices may also be part of the challenge of and resistance to power. Religion is not always about a dominating ideology. Not always, although it often is. In conclusion, the study of gender and religion is also about ideas of what it means to be male and female, partly about roles and identities and also practices. This has come to be discussed in terms of masculinities and femininities. How the person is expected to be through the practice of gender, through the practice, in some cases, of their religion. This takes us a long way from the baseline of what are often thought of as the natural or biological elements of sex, the differences between men and women that we often take as given. Indeed, the givenness of such issues, of such biological bases of gender, is very often needing to be deconstructed as ideologies in themselves. Some writers, such as Judith Butler, have suggested that all aspects of gender, including the biological givens of sexual anatomy, are ascribed by culture and power. That is, our bodies, whether we are women, men, or any other gender, are written up by our culture. We know the world so much through culture that we cannot know anything about our bodies from outside of that lens. This means, at the very least, we have to recognize that to understand gender differences, we need to recognize our own understandings, perhaps we could call them prejudices, about such differences, and start again by asking how cultures and the religions that make up those cultures construct genders and put them into practice. In sum, what we will explore in some later episodes of this podcast will be issues from this broad field of gender and religion. In particular, the main areas as follows. Gender differences as identities and practices. Sexualities in the contexts of religious traditions and power. Constructions of masculinities and femininities, of maleness and femaleness within religion and culture. How religion makes men and women, and vice versa. Gender as a field and expression of power and ideology. And in particular, how religion is part and parcel of all this, not as some detached otherworldly outsider looking in on all these human concerns, but instead as a medium or a location, or as an influence on other media or locations, through which such issues of gender and sexuality are practiced. So that's it for now. More in the next episode. Thanks for listening. And of course, if you want more details, don't forget the website mallorynye.com/religionbites. See you in the next episode. Bye for now.